Radio Prague News.
UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has praised the Czech Republic for its support of human rights. The coalition parties are considering a cabinet reshuffle, according to a media report. And in tennis, the Czech Republic is leading 2-0 over Japan in the quarterfinals of the Davis Cup. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has praised the Czech Republic for its support of human rights and humanitarian aid efforts. Mr. Ki-moon, who is in the Czech Republic for a brief visit, met with Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka on Friday. The officials discussed the situation in Ukraine, Syria and Central Africa, among other things. Mr. Sobotka said human rights would remain a priority of Czech foreign policy and announced the Czech Republic would like to become a member of the UN Human Rights Council. Ban Ki-moon also received Charles University's Golden Medal for support, understanding and cooperation between nations. In his remarks, Mr. Ki-moon joked he had wielded the Olympic torch in the past but never won a gold medal. The coalition Social Democrat and ANO parties are considering a cabinet reshuffle, the news website Novinky.cz reported on Friday, quoting sources from the coalition. The parties are reportedly planning to exchange the justice and healthcare portfolios. The Social Democrats would take over the justice ministry, while ANO would run the healthcare ministry. Under the planned reshuffle, Justice Minister Helena Válková would be replaced by Social Democrat Jeroným Tejc. The current Deputy Health Minister, Josef Vymazal of the ANO party, would replace Social Democrat Minister Svatopluk Němeček. However, Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka has denied such plans were being considered. In the latest news, the head of the Dawn party, MP Tomio Okamura, has filed a criminal complaint against Prime Minister Bohuslav Sobotka over his role in the 2004 privatization of the coal mining firm OKD. Mr. Sobotka, who then served as finance minister in a Social Democrat government, faces allegations the company was sold off for much less than the firm's real value. In a press release, Mr. Okamura said the cabinet ministers at the time might have made a deal with the buyer not to insist on a higher price. The OKD privatization has led to the first major rift in the coalition government after Prime Minister Sobotka accused ANO leader Andrej Babiš of using his media outlets to put pressure on the Social Democrats. Justice Minister Helena Válková on Friday dismissed the director of the country's prison service, Petr Dohnal. The minister said she had lost confidence in Mr. Dohnal's capacity to run the service and to push through a planned reform of the prison system. Ms. Válková named the head of the Rapotice Penitentiary, Pavel Ondrášek, the agency's acting director. The minister first moved against Petr Dohnal in February over his alleged reluctance to submit the agency to a ministerial inspection. Mr. Dohnal later said he felt he was being unfairly treated by the minister. Thousands of pilgrims from the Czech Republic and Poland will go to the Vatican to attend the canonization of two former popes, John XXII and John Paul II, on the 27th of April. Pavel Dokládal, head of the Pilgrim Center of the Bishopric in Hradec Králové, told the ČTK news agency. The event will be attended by leading Czech Catholic Church dignitaries Cardinal Dominik Duka, Olomouc Archbishop Jan Graubner, and Hradec Králové Bishop Jan Vokal. John Paul II, who was of Polish origin, became Pope in 1978 when communist rule in Eastern Europe was peaking. His steadfast views, openness and charisma won him many admirers in the Czech Republic, which he visited three times during his pontificate. And in tennis, the defending Davis Cup champions, the Czech Republic, are leading 2-0 over Japan in Tokyo in their World Group quarterfinal tie. In Friday's opening match, veteran Czech player Radek Štěpánek defeated Tatsuma Ito 6-7, 7-6, 6-1 and 7-5. It took Štěpánek, ranked 47th in the world, nearly 4 hours to claim victory against Ito, who is 146th in the ATP ranking. In the second singles encounter on Friday, Lukáš Rosol beat Japan's Taro Daniel 6-4, 6-4, 3-6, 4-6 and 6-2. And finally, a brief look at the weather. The weekend will be warm with partially cloudy skies, chances of rain and daytime highs ranging between 16 and 21 degrees Celsius. My name is Andrej Richter and that's the end of the news.
Hello, you're listening to Radio Prague with me, Chris Johnston. Today, United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is in Prague with a packed agenda of meetings with Czech officials. And we've got a roundup of some of the latest business news. And in today's arts, we talk to a US-based author whose inspiration is Prague's magical past. All that coming up, so stay with us. United Nations Secretary General Ban Ki-moon is in Prague for 2 days of talks with Czech top officials and a series of informal public appearances ranging from a lecture at Charles University to a walkabout in the city centre to inspect Prague's flood barriers. One of his first meetings upon arrival on Thursday was with Czech Foreign Minister Lubomír Zaorálek. Daniela Lazarová asked the Foreign Ministry's spokeswoman, Johanna Grohová, what was at the centre of interest of the talks.
The Czech Minister of Foreign Affairs, Mr. Zaorálek, organised a dinner in honour of General Secretary Ban Ki-moon at the Czech Ministry of Foreign Affairs. And during that occasion, they discussed the situation in Ukraine and its impact on relations with Russia and consequences, in particular when it comes to Central Europe. When it comes to its energy dependence and independence, which is an issue that we would like to promote as a country. At the same time, we discussed the impact of the much colder relations with Russia on various conflicts that we deal with, for example, in Syria. The General Secretary also appreciated the Czech role when it comes to the promoting of human rights in the world. He noted that it is a traditional part of the Czech foreign policy. They also discussed Czech and South Korean relations because of the homeland of Ban Ki-moon. He also appreciated that Prague, as a very beautiful city, is a huge interest for South Korean tourists.
I understand they also spoke briefly about the Czech Republic's interest in taking part in UN peacekeeping missions, in particular the peacekeeping mission in the Golan Heights, I believe, as of 2015. Is that right?
They discussed that issue. The Czech Minister Zaorálek confirmed our interest to contribute to the UN peacekeeping missions. That particular mission was discussed in a sense that that one is already filled with other military personnel and that we look for other suitable opportunities for our soldiers.
And I understand that the subject of climate change is of particular interest to the UN Secretary General.
Indeed, climate change and its impact on various countries, for example, Central Europe and elsewhere, was discussed too. General Secretary noted the fact that we've suffered some major floods and that he was going to observe the new defense systems in Prague.
What about the atmosphere of the meeting?
When it comes to the atmosphere during the dinner, that was very informal and friendly. It was very easy conversation between the two politicians. So I think that everyone had a very good feeling about the course of the dinner and its results.
Foreign Ministry spokeswoman Johanna Grohová, ending that report by Daniela Lazarová. And now I'm joined in the studio by Jan Wallinger for a roundup of some of the latest business news.
The finance ministry has transferred responsibility for the Pardubice explosives firm Explosia to the Ministry of Industry and Trade, Finance Minister Andrei Babiš revealed at a press conference. On Friday, the finance minister had sought the move to avoid any conflict of interest as the firm is dependent on chemicals producer Synthesia, owned by the agriculture and chemicals giant Agrofert. And Agrofert is, of course, owned and formally run by Mr. Babiš before he entered politics. Since 2002, Explosia has been owned by the state. Steps towards its privatization were taken by the previous government of Petr Nečas, but currently no privatization plans are on the table.
Irish low-cost carrier Ryanair resumed flights from Václav Havel Airport this week after a 3.5-year absence caused by high airport fees. The carrier is offering 12 flights a week from Prague, 7 to London Stansted and 5 to Dublin. At Prague's Václav Havel Airport, Ryanair faces competition from Aer Lingus, in which it has a minority shareholding. Airport spokeswoman Eva Krejci said that the carrier hoped to eventually increase the number of flights to London to 2 a day and 1 daily to Dublin.
The Russian group Evraz has sold its Czech division Evraz Vítkovice Steel, or EVS, to a group of private investors. EVS spokesman Jaromír Krysica told ČTK on Friday. However, he did not disclose the price of the transaction. The business website Patria CZ estimated the deal at almost 1.8 billion crowns. In addition, the new owners also acquired EVS's obligations totaling almost 3.8 billion crowns. The new owners want to continue to develop EVS as an independent player on the market for rolled products, Krysica said.
Less than a quarter of Czechs, 24%, are in favour of adopting the European currency, according to a poll released this week by the STEM agency. 48% of those polled remained firmly against adopting the euro, down from 55% in September 2012. An additional 28% were less strongly opposed to the idea. Both the centre-left government and the country's president have reaffirmed the need for adopting the European currency, the euro. Although no specific date has yet been set, 5 years down the line has been frequently cited as a target.
And finally, car sales in the Czech Republic rose by 18% in the first quarter to a total of almost 43,000 new vehicles. In the first 3 months of the year, Mladá Boleslav-based carmaker Škoda clinched 30% of total sales, followed by Hyundai and Volkswagen. Between January and March, Škoda sold 13,100 cars, Hyundai 3,935, Volkswagen a single car less. The percentage of cars bought for use by firms was 65.4%.
Fans of urban fantasy may be interested to learn more about Come Hell or High Water, a trilogy written by New York-based author Stephen Morris, a former Eastern Orthodox chaplain at Columbia University. His series, set in Prague, not only blends past legend with the present, but meticulously works with occult European magical practices and beliefs. In this interview with Morris, Jan Wellinger asked the author about his fascination with magic and how well it and religion mixed.
Well, it depends on how you define any one of those elements. When I was very small, I was terrified of the Wicked Witch of the West in The Wizard of Oz and ran from the room as soon as she appeared in Munchkinland in the fire and the smoke. But the next year, when I was 5 or 6, I made myself stay and watch the rest of the movie, and I was enamored of her, that she became my favorite character, partly because she's the only one that has any real power in all of Oz. Everyone else is working with illusion and persuasion. The only real magic is wielded by the Witch of the West. And I fell in love with fairy tales as a result. And when I was in fourth grade and came to the conclusion that God existed, part of the thrill of that realization was that the supernatural existed, perhaps not in exactly the same way that as the fairy tales and the Brothers Grimm described them, but certainly the world was much larger than I had heretofore imagined or thought possible, that many things, many possibilities opened up, miracles, saints, angels. And then also, as I got older, I realized that although magic has been consistently condemned by the church, the practices that define magic are very elusive and have never been consistent. And so things that are considered science and perfectly acceptable in one era are considered magic and not acceptable in another era. And if you go looking at the definitions of magic, even in pre-Christian Europe, pretty much magic is anybody else's religious practice that you don't like. So the Roman definition of magic was precisely the religion of the Chaldeans and the Mesopotamians and the Babylonians and all the non-Roman peoples. And the reason it was illegal was because it was usually associated, if you were practicing a non-Roman religion, you were probably involved in some kind of treason or traitorous rebellion. So that definition of magic, other people's religious practice, is pretty much what the church settled on. And the various things that have been condemned have always been the Protestants accused the Catholics of magic, the Catholics accused the Protestants of magic, and even in Russia, there's a 16th century council that says a certain text is a prayer when a priest says it, and it's a spell when a layman says it, which really undergirds magic is simply illicit religious practice.
Was it your interest in the history of magic that eventually led you to also study medieval history?
I think they went hand in hand. I loved medieval history, castles, knights, dragons. And when I was a young boy in Seattle, my relatives said, oh, Steve likes history. Let's take him to the museum. But all the museums in Seattle are about Japan and Native Americans. And I kept saying, where's the castles? Where's the dragons? And when I went to college on the East Coast at Yale, and I remember so distinctly right before Christmas, freshman year, realizing that it was closer and quicker and cheaper to go to London than back to Seattle, and I could literally feel the axis of the earth shift under my feet.
If you have an interest in castles, the Czech Republic is not a bad place to go. There's certainly a good many of them here.
It's beautiful.
When it comes to urban fantasy, do you think that Prague is a location that has been utilized often?
To my knowledge, not yet. I understand Dan Brown was here a couple weeks ago scoping out the place for one of, perhaps his next book, and one of the critics reviewing my books called me the Dan Brown of Prague, so maybe he'll be the Steve Morris of Prague next. But I think Prague is just waiting to burst into the urban fantasy landscape because there's so much wonderful material to work with here that it's really sad that it hasn't been tapped yet, but I'm very glad to be the first one to open those doorways.
You have London, Paris, those are sort of central locations, but this country does have a very rich tradition, you know, when it comes to, I guess, legends and magic and fairy tales, all of that.
Oh, there's so much here. Just walking around the old town, you have the thief who broke into St. Jacob's Church and who was caught by the statue. You have the priest who killed the prostitute in Our Lady of Tin and now lurks in the alleyway. You've got the miser running from his house near the old town square, burning, sort of repeating his death, clutching his money. You've got the black dog up by Loretto, who is a character in my stories. And for the life of me, I tried and tried and tried and couldn't find his origin story. So I had to create an origin story for the black dog at Loretto, but the chasm to hell there, it's an amazing cornucopia of material here.
Now, the first book in your trilogy opens with a bang. The prologue is very entertaining, and it's written at a very filmic pace.
Thank you.
What I noticed as a reader was your attention to detail, not only because it was unusual, but also because it felt very much in place. When one of the main characters is accused of being a witch in the year 1356, she's treated exactly as one would expect, or at least as you would expect it with some knowledge of how these things were conducted. She's first dunked into the river to see if she sinks. How important was it for you as an author to stick to historical facts like the dunking, even though you're telling a fantasy?
Oh, it was very important to me because I really wanted the magic to be what stood out. There's no point in gratuitously offending people who know what you're writing about. So you stick to history as much as possible. And in fact, the magic is all based on authentic medieval and Renaissance occult practices. So the books could just as easily be a how-to manual if you want to do some of these things. But it was very important to stick to the truth as much as possible so that a reader would know when I departed from the truth. For instance, the witch that's burnt in the prologue, in reality, no one was ever executed for witchcraft here in Bohemia. And so the German priest at Our Lady of Tin, in fact, is the one who riles up the crowd to lynch her so that there's no official record of it because it wasn't a legal action. So that explains why she could be killed and not leave any legal trace.
I was caught up in the pace, but I kept thinking ahead, will the king's men show up? Will the king's men show up? And it was with a certain satisfaction or maybe relief that they did, because at that point I knew, okay, that's what should have happened.
Yes, yes.
Finca. The condemned witch essentially curses the city.
Yes.
She gets the ball rolling. In the present day, we're introduced to Magdalena. Who is she? What role does she play as a central character?
Well, Magdalena is a secretary at the Charles University who's very bored with her life and has dabbled a little bit with Wicca and some New Age magic, but she's really kind of lost and looking for some excitement and something to do with herself. And she meets the ghost of Fenka underneath the Charles Bridge. In fact, Fenka is paddled up in a boat to meet Magdalena, and there's this giant woman in the boat. Magdalena at first doesn't realize who Fenka is with, but it turns out that it's the troll who lives under the bridge, who likes to drown people and rule the dead whose bodies are in the waves. But Fenka is brought by the troll to meet Magdalena, and Fenka convinces Magdalena that justice was not served on that day in 1356, and that it's up to Magdalena to set the record straight, to clear Fenka's name, and so Magdalena sets out to do exactly that. And she thinks she's going, by setting history straight and clearing Fenka's name, that she's also going to begin the process of unraveling centuries of oppression against women and religion against freedom, and that she will actually be the linchpin in quite a momentous social revolution. So she's quite thrilled and excited to finally be able to have this opportunity and to actually experience the supernatural as a reality.
The topic of the suppression of women, of course, is something that also came up in the Da Vinci Code there, that the role of Mary Magdalena was suppressed, basically, historically.
Right.
Is this a central motif as well of New Age or Wicca, this kind of belief that women had a much greater role in, say, the...
In pre-Christianity?
in the pre-Christian traditions, that this is something that maybe wasn't as well known in the past, but now has sort of become part and parcel.
It's certainly become part and parcel of the modern image of what pre-Christian religions in Europe were based on. It's hard to know exactly how much of that is truth and how much is our reading back into the record. Roman religion does not seem to have been particularly woman-friendly. Celtic religion possibly more so, but it's still difficult to actually discern the record because there's no living memory of these religions, although some people like to claim that they survived in the forests and the dens and the crooks of European wilderness. But a lot of what we now think of as pagan religion was reinvented in the 1850s. It takes a lot of elements from a lot of different places.
If we look at some of the fiction coming out these days, it seems that fantasy, science fiction, 5 minutes into the future novels, they've all become a little bit more mainstream than they used to be. Is this a benefit or a curse? You have, for example, The Walking Dead. It was a comic book. It's now become a mainstream television series about zombies. I didn't think that I would ever see that happen.
No, to tell the truth, I never thought I would see any of that happen, too. I always thought I was the strange one in high school. And here, all of a sudden, the nerds have taken over. The zombies, Game of Thrones, True Blood, all these things are just racking up the points in the rating system like crazy. I think it's nice that we finally got our due, that everyone sees what we've always seen all along. It's gratifying and surprising. I never expected it.
What do you think is the attraction? Is it some people would charge that it's escapist to sort of go into fantasy worlds when we have enough things that we should be dealing with?
Any great literature is escapist. We all need to check out of this world for a couple hours and read a good book or see a good movie and just take a break. That's why all the musicals and the dance spectaculars were so popular during the Depression in the United States, that people just need to get away from their regular, mundane, not-so-pleasant lives sometimes. And I think fantasy isn't a particularly good way. Especially urban fantasy, because it keeps you rooted in this world, in the contemporary society, so that it's familiar, but then it adds the thrill of magic that actually works.
Author Stephen Morris speaking to Jan Wellinger about his Prague trilogy. If you have any comments about today's programme, then please send them to us. You can contact us by email at english@radio.cz or on Facebook and Twitter. But that's all from me, Chris Johnston. Thanks for listening to Radio Prague, and goodbye.